You're listening to RTI Audio, powered by Rocky Top Insider. This is the RTI Press Pass with Rick Butler and Ryan Shumpert.
And welcome in to the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass. Today is Friday, June 24th. We're coming to you smack dab in the middle of the summer to kind of talk about some off-season stuff, to kind of talk about some of the latest stories that are going around relating to Tennessee in some kind of fashion. But we'll get into all of that in a minute. Coming up right now, got to introduce my good friend. You know him well, Ryan Shumpert. Good afternoon, my friend. What's going on?
Oh, not much. Just been doing some traveling this week and glad to get back on the pod. I guess our first one since a somber one discussing into the Tennessee baseball season. So excited to get into some, the slight off season of college sports, but as always, stuff to talk about.
Yeah. You know, when you're dealing with Tennessee sports, it's not like there's really ever an off season. I mean, there's times when the players aren't playing, but there's times when there's always news going on. But real quick, before we get into any of that, where in the world are you? Because like you had alluded to a second ago, you've been traveling, you've been all over the place this week. What has the week been like for you?
Yeah, so I'm back in Knoxville right now, very briefly. Went down to Nashville where my family was last weekend, and then went down with some friends from high school, played some golf in Florida this week for a couple of days, and got back Thursday, and then now headed to a Lastly family reunion. My mom's side of the family over in Bryson City, North Carolina, home of Vol great Heath Shuler this weekend.
Oh, so wow.
We'll be okay there for a few days before getting back to Knoxville to Sunday and hopefully being settled for a little while after that.
There you go. Well, that sounds like a great trip all the way around, but the golf in Florida sounds fantastic. I mean, that must have just been wickedly memorable.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was very toasty, but played some good fun courses down there, and it was fun to spend some time with some friends that I don't get to see a whole lot of over most of the year.
There you go. All right. Well, my friend, well, what do you say we go ahead and start getting into the news? Not that there's a ton going on right now, but still plenty of stuff for us to get into here on this Friday edition of the podcast. And what do you say for starters, we just kind of take it back to yesterday. We take it back to last night. You know, ever since the Tennessee basketball season ended back in March, the big conversation that Tennessee fans were having were, okay, well, what is the NBA draft going to look like? We know that multiple Tennessee players did submit their name, did kind of go through pre-draft workouts, pre-draft scouting evaluations, things along that nature. But it was former Tennessee freshman Kennedy Chandler who was the one to stick through that whole process leading up into the draft. I mean, you saw it. I saw it. I think a lot of the fans saw it. A lot of mock drafts had Kennedy Chandler projected as a first-round pick, kind of in the 18, 19, all the way up to 26, 27 range. Now, obviously, when you go through the NBA draft last night, Kennedy Chandler does not go at any of those spots. He starts to fall. What were your initial reactions when he started to kind of slip out and then you realized that he was not going to be a first-round draft pick? How surprised were you?
I was pretty surprised. I think from one, just what you said, I mean, consensus was that he was going to be a first-round pick. I guess shout out to Sports Illustrated. I mean, I think they were the one outlet that kind of consistently had him early in the second round where he ended up going. Over the past few weeks, you know, I don't know if I was thinking, man, Sports Illustrated is stupid, but obviously I like Kennedy Chandler. It was a joy to cover him. And to me, I think he's very much a first round talent. And I was kind of like bum on these guys for being down on.
Yeah.
Kennedy,
maybe you didn't see the whole season. Yeah. You don't know what I know. Maybe.
Or at least, you know, when you mix that with the fact that everyone else had him projected in the first round, or at least late first round, but in the first round, it was surprising. But they were all over. And I guess one, when you saw Memphis trade that 29th pick to be able to move up a couple spots, and I think take the guy from Colorado State, I want to say is who they took, but with their first pick, and then obviously they didn't take him there, and the Spurs didn't take him with that first pick they had late in the first round. Milwaukee didn't take him. Once that stuff happened, I kind of figured he was going to fall out because it kind of seemed like It was right around that early 20 range where a lot of people had him going to a handful of different teams. And then 29 was kind of the last straw. Memphis is going to take him at 29. And he is obviously, we'll talk about it in a second, but he's a great fit for Memphis. And the fact that Memphis didn't have that 29th pick anymore, I kind of assumed that was what's going to happen. But no, I mean, it was certainly a surprise to see him fall off. But just a yearly reminder, and we get him every year, of how much these NBA teams draft off of potential and not necessarily what these guys do in their lone or few college seasons. I mean, there were two pretty prime examples
late
in the first round. Patrick Baldwin Jr., who had an extremely disappointing season playing for his dad up at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He went, I want to say, 26-27, and then Paige Watson, who was another really disappointing five-star at UCLA, who hardly played, averaged like 5 points a game, I want to say. And he went, I believe, with the maybe the last pick in the first round, actually. So those two guys were kind of the classic reminders of it's not necessarily about what they did on the court, as Kennedy Chandler definitely had much better seasons than both of those guys. But that's how it goes. I mean, I think it's basically everybody would say Kennedy Chandler had a lot better season than Keon Johnson, freshman season than Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer did a year ago. Significantly better, in my opinion. And obviously both those guys went in the first round and Kennedy Chandler falls, but in the end he falls to a good spot and it will certainly be interesting to see what he does.
Yeah, that was kind of one of the things that I was zoning in on or locking into, at least when you knew that he was not going to be a first round selection, starts to slide back into the second round a little bit. Yeah, you really did start to think about, you know, what would have that potential looked like for him to come back to Tennessee. Obviously, Kennedy Chandler falls out of the first round into the second round, but he still lands at what I believe, you know, without any kind of background information, what I believe was probably the place that he wanted to go, right? We know that Kennedy Chandler is a Memphis native. We know that he is good friends with Ja Morant. It felt like that was probably the place that he wanted to go, or at least, hey, if I were him, that probably would have been the place that I wanted to go. So you have this weird kind of little juxtaposition of, yes, he falls out. Tennessee doesn't have that first rounder. They're fourth in the last 4 years. But at the same time, for him, for the player, for the kid, he still gets to go to a place in Memphis that, hey, he has grown up around. He has watched the Grizzlies program. He has been around it because of Ja Morant. Ja Morant was tweeting right after the Kennedy Chandler pick yesterday I guess he was just tweeting out his excitement towards it. So that was great to see. But you did kind of start to think about, once he started to slip into that second round, hey, man, maybe if Kennedy Chandler had known this, if he had known what was going to happen, hindsight is 2020, and we're talking in hypotheticals here, but if he had known that it was going to be all the way back at the 38th overall pick, would have been interesting to know how that might have affected his decision to leave Tennessee after a year. But at the end of the day, I think it still works out for him. Not as high of a pick as he would have liked, I would imagine, but I think he does land in a good spot all around for him.
No, you're right. And I think you still have those, you still wonder, you know, what if he knew he was going to fall out of the first round, would he have decided to come back to Tennessee for another year? And the difference from the first and second round in the NBA draft is a lot bigger than it is in the MLB draft, a lot bigger than it is in the NFL draft. And none of those contracts are going to be any guaranteed money. So in a lot of instances, that's kind of the line. If you think you're a first-round pick, you go. If you're not a first-round pick, you come back to school. And obviously, he was supposed to be a first-round pick. He was projected. And from, you know, some of his comments to, I think, some local Memphis TV stations last night, I think his expectation, what he heard in his draft feedback, is that he was going to be a first-round pick. But at the same time, not only are there the ties to Memphis, going back to his hometown, to Ja Morant, but the fact that Memphis is going to have an open backup point guard spot. Tyus Jones is a free agent. You would imagine them picking Kennedy Chandler indicates they're probably not going to re-sign him, which I think was the popular belief. So while there's not a guaranteed roster spot, while there's not any necessarily guaranteed money that's going to come with Kennedy Chandler there, he does go to a spot where not only is he in a comfortable spot, not only is he with a star player who's going to be looking out for him, and not that that's the end-all be-all, Ja Morant's not in the front office, but that certainly doesn't hurt. On top of all that, he's in a spot where there is a role for consistent playing time and opportunity that's right out there for the taking. And I think Kennedy Chandler will have a great chance to claim that and be not just on a two-way contract, but on an active NBA roster for his entire rookie season and be able to build off of that into the rest of his career.
Yeah, and to your point about Tyus Jones with the backup point guard spot, you know, I thought what the Grizzlies did yesterday in the draft was really fascinating, right? They took Auburn's Walker Kessler with the 22nd pick, obviously flipped him to Minnesota right away, ended up bringing in David Roddy, who the Sixers took at 23. But then the Grizzlies take Ty Washington, who also gets traded to Memphis with 29. So you kind of had this weird thing going on. And the Grizzlies, obviously, for me, was the team that I was watching for Kenny Chandler. You know that there are a couple teams that may have had an eye on him. Minnesota looked to be involved. Miami looked to potentially be a spot where he could land. But so many things kind of pointed you to Memphis. So as soon as you started Memphis start to be active throughout the first round of the draft, I almost didn't know what to think. I'm not a year-round draft expert by any means, but I was wondering, you know, how that was maybe going to set them up potentially for that to be a landing spot. And I think, again, at the end of the day, the financial side of it, unfortunate. We know that Kenny Chandler wanted that first round kind of money. We know that the second round does not get you the kind of money that a first round does, but at the same time, you still get a winning scenario where he goes to Memphis. So I think last night was kind of a weird thing of, you know, once he started to slide out of the first round, you kind of got really, really nervous for him until he landed at Memphis. And then it was like, okay, well, you know, he slid, but it kind of feels like it might've ended up working out anyways. I think that could be just such a great place for him to build a career. If that's what ends up happening, I'm really fascinated to see where the career of Kenny Chandler goes now.
Yeah, absolutely. It should be a lot of fun to watch. And I guess my last thought on it, which kind of goes more to confusion of him falling out, is we know the biggest knock on him is his size. He was, you know, I think 6'1" is what he measured at, or maybe just a little bit under that. He was the only player under 6'3" that got drafted in the whole entire draft last night. So we know that it was working against him, but we knew his size. We knew his size before he came to Tennessee, and he was projected as a first round pick, you know, a lot this last year. And to me, what changed is what I wonder about, because what he did on the court, it's hard to see why he really would have fallen. His free throw percentage is really the only knock on him. He shot 60% and obviously had a lot of struggles there in his lone season at Tennessee. But everything else, I mean, scoring was good. The passing lived up to the hype. And the fact he shot 38% from three and got better and better shooting from three as the year went on. I think I saw the stat in March, which I guess Tennessee would have played, trying to do some quick math here, I think six games in March, shot over 50% from three. And then you add the fact that defensively, which I think was a question mark because of his size coming in, he 100% lived up to the hype, ended up leading Tennessee, leading the SEC in steals, and really held his own on that end. So kind of some curiosities as to what changed, because the biggest knock on his NBA draft or NBA potential is that size. And we knew that coming in when, you know, he didn't shrink at Tennessee by any means. So I don't know exactly what changed in necessarily the draft boards. And maybe it's just the fact that these sites that project NBA draft picks were just higher on him than NBA scouts were. You know, I don't really know. But to me, that's kind of a curiosity that, we'll probably never get the answer to.
Yeah, you know, the size, certainly it seems like it was that big factor. He talked about it, like you said. I don't know the exact source, and I apologize for that. But, you know, I saw a quote after the draft where he said, hey, that's kind of where it is. I can't add any inches to my height, right? But I am going to be the hardest working player on the court. I am going to do everything else that it takes. Where there is an area where I can improve myself, I am absolutely going to. Unfortunately, I can't do that with my height. But I think that's a great mindset for him to have. And obviously, Ryan, you and I, after covering, you know, the player in his 1 year in Tennessee, being around him for a lot of the basketball season, I think obviously both of us want a great success for Kennedy Chandler. So going to see what that will be like at Memphis. But I think a lot of people's predictions came right. I think a lot of people had that kind of, that's where they were leaning towards maybe before the draft. Maybe didn't get the exact pick number right, but I think many people got the team right, at least when it comes to predictions. Hey, how about that? The hometown kid gets to stay in his hometown after playing for the flagship university of the state. I think that's a pretty cool story. We'll see what happens next. Story's not over yet, but at least the first couple chapters are pretty darn cool.
Yeah, for sure. We saw in the NFL draft, Theo Jackson, he goes Nashville, Knoxville, back to Nashville.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that's
and
right.
And now Kennedy Chandler, Memphis, Nashville, back to Memphis. So really cool. And certainly wish nothing but the best for Kennedy. He was a pleasure to cover in his 1 year in Knoxville.
Yeah, I agree. Is there a baseball prospect that can be like that? I mean, I know you got a couple of first round prospects for Tennessee right now. Is there any, like, you have any Georgia or any of those guys from Georgia where like they go to the Braves? I know that's not you know, Tennessee hometown, but that's at least the kind of the East Tennessee team.
Yeah, I don't know specifically if anyone's from, you know, in MLB City. And obviously that's so different because you don't actually go straight to the MLB.
Yeah, you're right. That's so true.
Drew Gilbert, you know, he's from Minnesota, obviously the Twins up there. I don't know where exactly how far he is from that. Trey Lipscomb in Virginia, I don't know how far where he is in Virginia is from Washington, D.C. or Baltimore, kind of on the other end. Obviously, there's a lot of those areas right near each other. So plenty of, you know, potential options, but obviously it works a little different because you're going to be spending a couple of years bouncing around other stops before you get to the MLB.
You know, I think if I had thought about that question for about a good 10 seconds before I asked that, I would have come to the same conclusion as you just did. But hey, we got there and you are exactly right about it. You're right, man. Baseball is a little bit different when it comes. Baseball is just a little bit of a different sport. But let's kind of stay on that note right there. Ryan, we know that Tennessee is not playing in the College World Series, unfortunately, but still has been a gigantic tournament going on, filled to the brim with SEC teams. And an SEC team will potentially have a shot at the national championship. Oklahoma and Ole Miss, that is going to be your final matchup for the College World Series. Game one will be on Saturday at 6 o'clock p.m. Any kind of thoughts just on anything that's happened in the College World Series so far? Has there been anything to grab your attention? And let me ask this, has it been difficult for you to tune into the College World Series? I know for me, not necessarily as much even from a Tennessee perspective, but it just kind of felt like from an overload baseball perspective right there with the regionals, with the super regionals, those were some long days and some long weekends. So I almost needed a little bit of a break, but I have really locked back into the College World Series in the last couple of days or so, really after the first couple of teams get knocked out. I have jumped back in since then. What about you? How much interest have you had?
Yeah, no, I would say pretty similar. I watched a little bit of it early on. I watched a Notre Dame Texas game to start it out and really kind of followed Notre Dame pretty closely, which
that's what I was doing. I really wanted Notre Dame was the only team that was in this, you know, in either of these brackets that I was like, you know what? I might have a little bit of a personal connection to them. Like just because, you know, we did see them so many times, you know, during the super regional weekend and you see them with the press conferences and you kind of almost feel like you don't get to know the Notre Dame players, but you're like, they're at least familiar. So I might as well go ahead and put my horse with them.
Yeah.
That's at least how I felt.
Yeah, no, definitely. It was curious to see how they did, obviously. And I think I'll kind of go in side note here, but the big news today, Link Jarrett, the new Notre Dame's head coach, does leave to take the Florida State job and go back to his alma mater, which I don't think was a huge shock. Obviously, he kind of addressed those rumors, I believe, after game one in a super regional. I believe that was the same day that Florida State made a coaching change. So, you know, that was interesting to see, not necessarily surprising. Florida State's a much better baseball job than Notre Dame is. All you got to do is look at a map of the United States to figure that out and due to geography on it. So, that wasn't a surprise, but kind of back to your original question, I found myself watching more and more of the College World Series as it's gone along, and I'm certainly excited to watch the final. And Ole Miss is, you know, SEC team. I think an SEC team winning would probably make it hurt more for Tennessee fans, but to me, they've been an awesome story. They were 4 weeks, I believe, into the SEC season. They were in last place in the SEC. They were the very last team in the NCAA tournament. I know I didn't think they should have gotten into the NCAA tournament over a couple of teams. North Carolina State and Rutgers stand out to me. But, boy, I mean, it just shows how crazy baseball is.
Didn't they get knocked out of the SEC tournament, too, like right away?
Yeah, they lost to Vanderbilt in that first game. And heck, you look at it. The teams that Arkansas obviously lost in the semifinals, they went 0-2 in Hoover. And I'm trying to think, Texas A&M did okay. They made it to the semis and then they had a bye. So I guess they won, maybe went 1-2 or maybe 2-2, whatever the math would be on that. So kind of further proof, which we talked about it at the time, that what you do in the SEC tournament doesn't necessarily have a whole lot of bearing on what's going to happen going forward. But as often is the case, more and more proof of that this year.
You know, when you really think about those conference tournaments from a basketball and baseball perspective, you have seen so much from just the SEC in the last 2 years. I mean, you think about Tennessee going to winning the SEC basketball tournament title for the first time since 1979, which parlays into a second round knockout, just like it did for the Tennessee baseball team. You win that tournament in Hoover, you go on and you lose in the super regionals. Meanwhile, you see an Ole Miss lose in the first round and basically get all this time off. And you're right, they did get lucky enough to sneak into the tournament, but boy, were they well rested when those regional games did start. I think that the conference tournaments, and I don't want to get into the full conversation right now because we don't necessarily have the time, but I do want to get into a bigger conversation about the conference tournaments at some point, maybe this summer, just to talk about, you know, maybe even suggestions to rework them if we could in a perfect world, because it is just this weird situation of, man, sometimes it really helps you. Sometimes you can make it really far, but it doesn't help as much. Sometimes it gives you an advantage for losing early. And sometimes maybe even winning that tournament can maybe put you in a detrimental or a bad position heading into that first round of the postseason. Obviously, you can't necessarily make a direct tie, but you can say that, hey, maybe another team benefited from the rest or something like that. But yeah, to go back to the overall point, though, just, you know, I've really thought about the conference tournaments a lot in the last couple of months, from basketball to baseball, and just how kind of fascinating they are in comparison to the postseason tournaments. Nothing is guaranteed at all.
No, nothing's guaranteed. And it feels like every year in basketball, it's obviously, we talked about it at the time, basketball and baseball being different. You know, baseball, the rest, the pitching is a big part of it. But in basketball, you would think it's very much a how you're playing in March theme, and a lot of times teams do continue to play really well into the NCAA tournament. Go back to the Auburn team a few years ago that beat Tennessee in the SEC tournament, went on to go to Final Four, or even Alabama team last year won the SEC tournament, and they made it. You know, they didn't go to Final Four, but they went to the Sweet 16. They lost in overtime to a UCLA team that obviously went on a really good run and lost on the buzzer beater to Gonzaga in the Final Four. So it goes a lot of ways. But again, this year Iowa won the Big Ten tournament, and then they got bounced in the first round. So. And like you just said, it's no guarantee of success at all. And if I'm not mistaken, I'll have to look this up in a second, double check myself. But I believe Oklahoma did win the Big 12 tournament this year in baseball. So there's an example of a team who had postseason success or conference tournament success and carried it into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, they just kept that momentum going. Yeah, that's a really fascinating thought too. These things are just so unpredictable. They're such just wild shoots, essentially. So that is just a fascinating. We'll eventually dive back into that conversation. Real quick, any predictions for the finals? Oklahoma, Ole Miss?
Yeah, just double checked. Oklahoma did win the conference Big 12 tournament this year, and I'm gonna go with Oklahoma. I mean, they've been playing really as well as anybody, and I think one thing that's big is the fact that they swept through their side of the bracket.
Yeah,
one more game of not having to use pitchers, and the fact that Dylan DeLucia, who was the guy way back when in March, who after that first Tennessee game said, oh, we didn't take those guys seriously, we're going to beat them, and kind of got put in the doghouse for talking to the media. He's the one who turned around Ole Miss this whole season. Ole Miss couldn't get anybody out.
Yes.
And they move him to the starting rotation after maybe a week or two after that. He's been fantastic for them since he throws a complete game shutout to put Arkansas to bed yesterday, so on Thursday. And maybe he'll be available for like a relief appearance if it goes to game three, but you know, he's already thrown twice in Omaha. He threw away a lot of pitches and a lot of taxing pitches in a low-scoring game on Thursday with Ole Miss not having its best arm available. I'm going to go with Oklahoma, but who knows? Anything can happen. Obviously, Ole Miss is playing incredibly well, too, and that lineup has been as dangerous as any in the country in the NCAA tournament.
Well, I guess to just be different from you, I love picking a team of destiny. It feels like Ole Miss is the team of destiny here. Ryan, I do not think that you get in the way of destiny. You do not get on the train tracks when the train of destiny is rolling along the path, whatever it is, the rails. Okay, so I'm going to go Ole Miss, even though I think that your argument was very convincing there. But to be different, I'm going to go Ole Miss. So one of us will win, one of us will lose.
Yeah, we'll get to talk about it next week. Heck, yep. Baseball. So my logical argument probably will fall flat, and Ole Miss will win a national championship, and the Mississippi schools might go back to back.
All right, my friend. Well, let's go ahead and round this thing out with the third leg of the Holy Trinity of Tennessee men's sports, and go to the football side of things. So we obviously got to a little bit of basketball, a little bit of baseball already. Ryan, we know that we are in the smack dab middle of the summer right now, which means really one thing and one thing only: recruiting. We know the recruiting has been going on all spring. Tennessee has, a lot has happened. Tennessee starts the recruiting spring with Nico Iamaliava in late March. And that sets Tennessee up with a foundational piece to attack the summer with. I think once you have that in your arsenal, once you have that in your repertoire, that changes the way you recruit, because now you start going out to these other high profile players. And this is your, this is almost your recruiting pitch, your selling pitch, your marketing pitch. Getting Nico at the beginning or at the end of March was such a big portion for Tennessee, setting that foundational piece. Now, we know that Tennessee has struck out a little bit since then. I think that there's really been nobody who has been dead set to go to Tennessee, but has switched at the last minute or so. I think Carnell Tate is the big one that people are familiar with. This is a guy that, you know, who was projected to Ohio State for so long. Now, Tennessee did come in and seems like they really made some waves of excitement there in the middle of the spring, even changed around some predictions a little bit. So I think you see how impactful of a footprint that Tennessee has now. But Carnell Tate decides to eventually go back to Ohio State, or not go back, but that's where he decides to commit to. Seems like that's where he wanted to go from the beginning. So I don't necessarily consider that a massive loss on the trail, as in some, you know, a kid that has been wanting to play for Tennessee for forever and you fumbled the recruitment at the last minute. But at the same time, we know that there's still a lot of players coming up that are going to be very valuable pieces for Tennessee. This weekend in particular, starting really today, Friday, is going to be a big weekend at Tennessee. And I think it is mainly headlined by a trio of Nico Iamaliava, Madden Iamaliava, who is a quarterback in the class of 2025. Very, very talented and very, very just a raw, talented prospect. And then you have offensive lineman Francis Maligoa, who I think is another primetime prospect from IMG Academy, where Carnell Tate was. The thing about those three players, though, is all, oh, I guess really both of the families are coming in. I think these are families, and we just know from different stories in the recruiting trail, family is very important to all of these players. Family is very important to the culture that they're coming from. So I think having all of them in Knoxville at one time, who knows, that could be a big step up for the recruiting scene in Knoxville this weekend, but certainly a big weekend, certainly a big couple of big headliners. What more do you know about the weekend?
Yeah, no, you're right. It is a huge weekend, and Maligoa, is that how Maligoa? Francis Maligoa, is that it?
You know, I am still not positive on it. It's not like Nico, where we have a definitive pronunciation, right? Iamaliava is definitely it. We'll have to wait maybe on that official for Francis, but I'm sure if he does commit to Tennessee eventually, we will get that pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well,
but I've kind of been just saying it fast until the meantime. I mean, no disrespect at all. I just don't know how to properly say it. So I've kind of just been saying it fast.
I'll just go with Francis, because I know how to pronounce
sure.
that.
But yeah.
To me,
go.
That's the big one, because Tennessee got him on campus for the first time back, I don't know, maybe 6 weeks ago now, back in late spring, and seemed to make a lot of waves with him. But they've had to withstand. A bunch of official visits, basically. And this is his last of five official visits that he's gone on in the last 3 weeks, basically. And he's gone and seen Florida. He's gone and seen Alabama. He's gone and seen USC and Miami. I mean, these are big dogs in the recruiting world. And Tennessee certainly made a splash with him the first time around. But, you know, he's gone and seen a lot of really good options since then. So, to me, I think you're right. I think that's huge. You get his family back on – you get his family to campus for what I believe is the first time, if I'm not mistaken. So you're right. That's absolutely huge. I think getting Nico on campus with them and Nico's family on campus with them could be beneficial. So to me, that's kind of the headliner. And maybe the other guy that I really have an eye on is Christian Conyer, the defensive back from Kentucky.
Yep.
He's closing in on his college decision, which is going to be coming up here in the next couple of weeks. That's been a Kentucky-Tennessee battle for a long time. And it seems like the predictions go back and forth on it. He was at Kentucky last week, and it seemed like the Wildcats left that visit with a lot of momentum. So, to me, a big opportunity. I believe his last visit before committing, a big opportunity for Tennessee to kind of put their final pitch, their final nail in the coffin if they do end up landing him, but an opportunity to kind of make the last impression on a defensive back they really want.
Yes, you are absolutely right. I can't remember what I was going to interject with there, but yes. Oh, you said that his announcement, his commitment announcement is coming up soon. That is actually going to be on July 3rd. So,
okay.
I mean, just a little over 2 weeks, maybe a little less than 2 weeks a little over a week, a little less than 2 weeks away. So that is going to be, I mean, it is right there on the horizon. I think this is a big opportunity for Tennessee to know what kind of high profile prospects and players that they have on campus this weekend. At some point, they really got to start parlaying those into true commitments. We know that Tennessee has 10 right now, and we know that Tennessee has good talent in the class. I mean, Nico, one of the best quarterbacks in the class. You have, by the way, Arch Manning commits to Texas yesterday. That was pretty wild. Ethan Davis is a very dynamic tight end. Sylvester Smith, a very talented safety. You certainly have players in the class who are going to be solid, but also you know that there are, I mean, top 50 national players out there, top 100 national players out there that you are in the mix for. And I think that these are really big opportunities for Tennessee to close this thing down. Now, at the same time, all this being said, hey, it's June 24th, right? We're in the smack dab middle of the summer. There is still time on the horizon, time for Tennessee to work with. But at the same time, hey, you see these commitments happening and you see these players committing to their schools right now. So you want to be in the middle of the action. You want to be in the middle of everything. I think that Tennessee needs to land a big recruit or two coming up soon. I think there's a couple of good opportunities for them, but certainly this weekend is going to be a big spoke in that wheel, if you will, with the headliners of Nico, Madden, Francis, and we'll say Christian Conyer as well. I think that he can really kind of be a headline name too.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's, you know, they're swinging with big dogs, so you know, they're missing out on guys. And I don't think there's a whole lot of shame in losing a receiver to Ohio State, given how much talent Ohio State puts in the
NFL. Or like Kyler Casper with Oregon, right? It's like we know that Oregon, for as well as Tennessee is seemingly recruiting right now, like we know that Oregon is also doing the same thing over there on the West Coast too. So like these are not detrimentally, miserably big losses on the recruiting trail, but certainly something that, hey, Tennessee has an eye on, and some of these guys have to start committing to them.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah. All right, my friend. Well, unless you have anything else on the weekend coming up, we're going to be having our eye on it for the next couple of days. We will have you covered on RockyTopInsider.com. But unless you have anything else on the weekend or unless you've seen anything else going on this week, well, it's about time to get out of here.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. I think you kind of hit on a second ago, Arch Manning to Texas was probably the big news of the week. And I think Vol fans very, very excited that he will not be, he'll be playing in the SEC, but he won't be an SEC rival of Georgia and Alabama. So it certainly will be an interesting chapter in the Manning family book. Let's see what he does at Texas.
Yeah, and it looks like the latest on Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC looks to be for 2025. That comes from a report earlier this week. Now, obviously, things could happen and things could get expedited on that timeline if certain variables happen along the way. But as far as things stand now, looks like 2025 is going to be the first year that Texas and Oklahoma officially enter the SEC. But Ryan, as we wrap up that conversation, it is time to wrap this thing up and close it down and get out of here for a Friday edition of the show today. Hey, thanks for tuning in and joining as always. Remember to be following along with Racked Up Insider on all the different social medias. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. So be sure to go and check us out there. Be sure to go check out RockyTopInsider.com for all of your Tennessee news content and coverage. For Ryan Shumpert, you can go and follow him on Twitter at rshump00. I'm Rick Butler. You can go and follow me at Rick_Butler on Twitter. You've been listening to the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass.